Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Pamela Wu, in today for Randall White. As you just heard in the news, Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order Wednesday banning the sale of all gasoline-powered vehicles by 2035. The move is widely seen as the most aggressive clean car policy in the nation. The governor cited climate change as the biggest reason for the ban. The order will phase out the sale of new gas-powered cars and trucks. It will still allow gas-fueled vehicles to be owned and sold on the used car market. Stay with us for news about that. We'll also check in with public health leaders in Sacramento and Nevada counties as more areas across the state are starting to move toward gradual reopenings. Now, Ezra David Romero is an environment reporter for CAP Radio. He's been covering the news on Governor Newsom's clean car order. He's here with us on Insight. Welcome, Ezra. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the order. We said it bans the sale of gasoline-powered vehicles by 2035. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it's all new cars and passenger trucks by 2035. So that means they can't emit fuels like carbon that warm the atmosphere and cause climate change, you know, that hurt people's lungs, warm the atmosphere. And in turn, you know, we have wildfires and things like that. You know, this is quite simple in theory, but it'll take a lot of work from the California Air Resources Board and other agencies to develop this regulation. And part of it, you know, is for off-road vehicles. And then there's been other rules like this just in this past year as well when it comes to semi-trucks and even ports.
What reasons did Governor Newsom cite for doing this?
Well, I think the largest one is climate change. You know, we're living with the consequences of the climate crisis. You know, mega fires that we've seen that we're breathing in, the smoke from floods, drought, sea level rise, heat islands in communities, you know, all things that Californians are going through. And because, you know, the transportation sector makes up about 40 to 50% of the state's greenhouse gas emissions, that's a lot. You know, 80% or so of that is the smog forming pollution, and not about 90% of, and there's a bunch of toxic diesel emissions in that as well. So by tackling climate change through cars and the oil industry, which this also nods to, it would expedite California's already ambitious efforts to curb carbon emissions, you know, that lead to a warmer environment and ultimately lead to loss of human life and the environment.
What does this order mean exactly for California and its residents? In practical terms, what are the implications?
Well, I mean, if you're going to buy a car starting in 2035, hopefully you will have to buy an electric car if it's going to be brand new. There are something like 66 models available right now. They hope to bring the cost of those down. You know, I think in the past, electric cars have been seen as something for the elite. They've been expensive. They, you know, car share programs exist, but they haven't always worked very well. And so I think the idea is to make them equitable. And when Mary Nichols was asked about that, she said, you know, there's an arms race going on between automakers to get the cheaper and more effective batteries that will make these electric cars cost a lot less. And she noted that Tesla is, you know, is working on battery innovation, which could bring down the cost of cars. And even like Volkswagen has committed to only making electric cars. So I think the prize and the sense that we're going for is to make them affordable for everybody. But I think we've seen in the past that hasn't always worked. So we'll see what happens by 2035.
Mary Nichols, of course, the chair of the California Air Resources Board. With a push toward electric vehicles, as you said, you know, making them more affordable, more accessible. If there is this big wave of electric cars, they need to be charged, of course. Where would people charge all of them? Is that part of the plan?
Yeah, so there will be a need to ramp up charging infrastructure. Right now, there are about 725,000 zero emission cars sold in California, and there's about 62,000 chargers. But if you think about the number of 40 million people in California, that's not enough. So that will have to be part of the conversation.
What about hybrid cars? Those, of course, are hybrid because they combine gas with electric. How are hybrids affected?
Yeah, Mary Nichols with CARB addressed this yesterday by saying we're transitioning away from hybrid and in the direction of full or zero. But she said that's something like a 15-year process, you know. So in the meantime, she says it's going to be a lot of people trying out hybrids first, and then, you know, as things get more advanced, going to zero emissions.
Obviously, there was a lot of reaction to this yesterday. Can you talk to us about the sort of spectrum of reception that the order has received?
Sure. Yeah, there's haters out there about this. You know, the oil industry doesn't love this idea and says the new administration shouldn't pick winners and losers in the climate fight. You know, there's been lots of hope and kind words like this is a step in the right direction. But others still say this doesn't move fast enough to decarbonize California. You know, we are in a climate crisis and 10 more years, 15 more years of emitting toxic fumes into the air, whether it's California or the rest of the world, will still do damage to our lungs and do damage to the earth.
This order is being called by many experts the most aggressive clean car policy in the nation. How are people reacting to that piece of the news?
Sure. You know, I think it is in many ways. Newsom said that himself. But there's a group of environmental groups that, you know, are saying this is not going fast enough. They called last week in these public ads in the LA Times and other places and asking for 100% zero emissions from transportation sector when it comes to cars and trucks by 2030. So 5 years faster than what we are seeing announced yesterday. And they're saying that's because we are in this significant crisis and it needs to go faster. When we asked Newsom about that at the press conference yesterday, he said, you know, we're doing something no other state has ever done in history. And arguably, this is the most significant effort of its kind anywhere in the world. And I think the other part about this is, you know, even though transportation is a huge, has a huge role in the climate crisis, so does oil. And this is all part of removing fossil fuels from our economy. These environmental groups laid out other actions that would, you know, make that a faster journey as well. And so I think for many, it's just a piece of the puzzle.
Ezra David Romero is an environment reporter for CAP Radio. Ezra, thanks for being with us this morning.
No problem.
We have reactions from parties in support of and in opposition to the governor's clean car order. First, we welcome the director of Sierra Club California, Catherine Phillips, for her thoughts. Catherine, welcome to Insight.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Catherine, what was your initial reaction to the governor's announcement?
My initial reaction is that this is a good first step. The governor hasn't been the most assertive when it comes to climate change. He's been fairly quiet about it since he came into office. There have been a lot of other things drawing attention away from this. But I think now, after going through 2 years of fires, sea level rise impacts, and other climate impacts, he's gotten the religion. And he's decided he needs to do something. I heard him say something today on a podcast that we need to rip the Band-Aid off and get busy accelerating what we need to do to impact climate change.
You called it a good first step. Does that mean that in your opinion, you wish it went farther?
Yes. And, you know, one of the things to remember is that California has been working on electrifying the vehicle sector since the early 1990s. And as a result of that, car makers have also started building more and more electric cars. And some countries are now including in the new car sales, more than 50% of their new car sales are electric cars. So this is very doable. We would have liked to have seen it that this would happen in 2030. But 2035 is acceptable as a beginning. But, you know, this is just the first step of many things that are going to have to happen, have to be accelerated, don't necessarily require executive orders, but do require some action by the Newsom administration. And among those things are building electrification. There's the Title 24 right now is being considered, and those are the building codes that determine what goes into new homes and commercial buildings. The 2022 are under consideration. There needs to be 100% electrification mandate in that. Not only will it reduce greenhouse gas emissions, because that means people won't be bringing methane into their homes, it'll actually make homes cheaper, and it will make homes healthier. Indoor air pollution will be substantially reduced by getting the gas out.
Sierra Club California, of course, is one part of a larger national organization. Do you see a domino effect coming with other states following suit?
Yes. You know, there are other states somewhere in the low teens. There are states signed up to and referred to as the 177 states. These are states that have essentially adopted California's tailpipe emission standards for vehicles. All of those states now will as the California Air Resources Board develops the regulations for the next round of tailpipe emissions, this mandate will be part of that, and those other states will be buying into it. So even though California itself represents about 12% of the car manufacturing or the car sales of brand new cars, and I think it's important to emphasize again that it's brand new cars, even though California represents about 12% of that, it's actually bigger than that because of the other states that follow our lead.
And very quickly, critics of this order say it's a distraction from other issues that we're currently facing, like unemployment, homelessness, wildfires. They say the governor is ignoring more urgent problems at hand. What's your reaction to that criticism?
I think it's important to point out that the boldest, loudest critics of this are the oil industry, which is the cause of climate change, basically. The use of fossil fuels is what in combustion engines is what is creating this havoc. And it is not in their economic interest to see us become unhooked on this very potent and very toxic product. And then you're also going to find that a lot of the politicians who are speaking out against this, if you go in and you look at the who they get money from, the oil industry, the oil and gas industry, other fossil fuel interests, they're a big part of the contributions to those politicians. I think what's really interesting is, for instance, some of the biggest car dealers in the state are saying we can get there. We understand we need to do something. We understand the importance of getting clean air and also improving our ability to reduce the climate catastrophes in the future.
That's the director of Sierra Club California, Catherine Phillips. Catherine, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Not everyone is welcoming Governor Gavin Newsom's order. Republican Shannon Grove is the California Senate Minority Leader. She represents a large swath of the Central Valley, including Bakersfield and Visalia. And she's among those who've been critical of the ban on gas-powered vehicles by 2035. Senator Grove joins us now. Senator, welcome to Insight.
So thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We're glad to have you. Senator, yesterday you tweeted this. The governor is once again chasing headlines instead of focusing on the immediate and real problems of the state, such as high housing costs, the energy grid, forestry management neglect, the homeless problem, paying UI, that's unemployment insurance claims, or getting schools open. Can you share more about why you feel there are more pressing issues than auto emissions at this time?
Absolutely. You know, the governor's chasing headlines and not providing real solutions to Californians. I think Californians have had enough of these extremist policies that are forced rolling blackouts. They've shuttered thousands of businesses, fueled catastrophic wildfires, predominantly caused because of the legislation the Sierra Club pushes through the building so that we can't mitigate land management and forest management. They've killed our freelance economy and beyond. Governor Newsom needs to spend less time pursuing headlines and solving the problems that we face every day in California. And, you know, I listened to your last speaker. The fact that Californians can survive without oil and gas or petroleum products is just completely unrealistic. Petroleum products provide for our asphalt and our roads, plastic bags that they mandate at the grocery store, electric vehicles that are made out of plastic plus aluminum that is also in these electric vehicles. Vital medical equipment that we have to have in our hospitals is also a byproduct of petroleum. The footballs our children play with, telephones, toothpaste, trash bags. I could go on and on about how vital the petroleum industry is to our everyday living. And if you don't think that we can produce it safely and under the safest, most strictest regulatory requirements here in the state of California, which we do, look at the imports that we brought in. When we were not using gasoline during the pandemic shutdown, when the governor did his 14-day shutdown, which now I think is 202 days, but look at the ports. They were full of tankers, full of oil that came over our ecosystem from Ecuador and other countries because Californians' reliance on fossil fuels has not stopped. You're just trying to eliminate it here.
What challenges do you see in terms of incentives and infrastructure, like in a more practical sense, to make the governor's order happen?
Well, look at now. Well, every Californian is facing rolling blackouts. The lights aren't coming on. You know, in Californians, we're not a third world country. When we plug something in, we expect it to work, whether it's a ventilator or a breathing machine at night. And the governor has shut down our electricity grid several times because of rolling blackouts. Now to add electric vehicles in masses to this grid, where does that power come from? He's shutting down the Redondo Beach plant. That plant provides 24% of the energy grid's power to our system. Where does that supply come from once that's eliminated? If you continue to add more to our electricity grid without solutions for supply, that is going to be a catastrophic situation for all of Californians.
Senator, what will you be doing? What can you do to oppose the order?
So we're working hard with industry to see if we can find a way to get the governor to focus on the true facts and science of climate change. When you look at the fires that have taken place, there is more fire carbon, there's more hydrocarbons or carbons released in the atmosphere because of the wildfires that we have burning. That was evident. You know, the executive order talks about the disadvantage or disproportionate to Black and Brown communities. Well, I don't care what community you are from, you breathed horrific air these last few weeks because of these wildfires. And the Sierra Club purposely put through legislation that did not allow us to mitigate our wildfires, our forests, so that we could reduce the fuel. They've eliminated logging, which is responsible forest management. And so we're going to work with industries to try to really come up with solutions. And we have solutions for the state of California. Eliminating fossil fuels is just going to create another disaster. When you think of everything that the fossil fuel industry offers, jobs for those coming out of prisons that are second chancers, those jobs will be eliminated, if fossil fuels disappears. And again, it's safe and regulatory, so regulatory mandated in this state. And if we don't get it here, we get it from foreign countries. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to work on solutions, and hopefully the governor will listen, like I said, to real science and technology that shows that you have to have fossil fuels in this equation. Let's think about the firefights, the fires for a few minutes. You got a D9 dozer up on a fire line trying to stop people's houses from burning down or our forests being destroyed. How is that going to be electrified? And how do you get it electrified? Do you run it down to the Central Valley and charge it on a grid that doesn't exist up in the mountains? And then how long does it take? Sometimes I've heard it takes 2 to 4 hours or overnight to charge a Tesla to drive. You look at the economy. How does a single mom, you know, they said this is for our single mom, you know, for our poor disadvantaged communities. How does a single mom buy a Tesla or ride a bicycle if she can't afford a Tesla or a car that's electrified or operates on batteries? How does that single mom take 3 kids to the grocery store on a bicycle to buy groceries for her family? It's absurd. These are just AOC grabbing headlines, and there's no solution to the problem.
Shannon Grove is the California Senate Republican leader. Senator, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Still to come, more counties across the state are starting to move further into reopening phases that are less restrictive. Nevada County has moved into the orange or COVID moderate tier, meaning some businesses are allowed to increase activities and serve more customers. Sacramento County is expected to further reopen next week as COVID-19 numbers improve in the area. We'll talk with public health officials in both counties. I'm Pamela Wu, in today for Randall White. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Insight here on Capital Public Radio. I'm your host, Pamela Wu, in for Randall White. From schools to businesses, more counties across the state are starting to move toward further reopenings. Nevada County has moved into the orange COVID tier, that's the moderate tier, and it means that some businesses are allowed to increase activities and welcome more customers. Sacramento County is expected to move further along next week with reopenings as COVID-19 numbers improve in the area. We will hear from Nevada County shortly. First, joining us now is the director of the Sacramento County Department of Health Services, Dr. Peter Bielinson. And for the sake of transparency, since we're talking about health, I want our audience to know that while I am filling in for Randall here today, my full-time job is with UC Davis Health. Dr. Bielinson, good morning and welcome to Insight.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Sacramento County is currently in the purple or widespread tier, which is the most restrictive. Would you please explain what that means and the metrics behind what it takes to move into the less restrictive red tier?
Yes. Yeah, so the purple tier is, well, first of all, the tiers are based on two metrics, percent positive tests and number of cases per 100,000 people. Sacramento has 1.5 million people. So in the purple, we have to have more than 7 cases per 100,000 or more than 105. To get to red, we need to be around 75 cases. So that gives people an idea. And to get to orange, about 45 cases. And our percent positive rate has to be under 8% to get us into the red. Right now, we're actually at the orange level in our percent positive tests and the red level in cases per 100,000, in which case you go to the deeper version. So we'd end up being red, and that we'll find out Tuesday morning.
What is the approval process for a county to move into a different tier?
The approval process, you need to stay 3 weeks in a tier color, in a color tier. So we've been 3 weeks in purple and have 2 weeks at the lower color metrics. So we will have been 2 weeks with orange and red, as I was mentioning, which means we end up red next Tuesday, assuming the numbers stay good.
Assuming that the numbers stay good. That was going to lead right into my next question, which was what can change between now and then? And what are you keeping your eye on?
So we're keeping our eye on the two major metrics, and we are at 21,872 cases, which means nothing other than we are at actually about 5 cases per day per 100,000 people. So that is well within the red level, and we want to keep that going. And then our percent positivity, the percent of our tests that are positive is now down to 4.8%, which is actually at the orange level. So we're looking at those two metrics, particularly in terms of the colored tiers.
In terms of change that people can see, what changes will residents of Sacramento County see if the county's lowered into the red tier?
So there are, most of the business sectors will be able to operate, not all of them. There are like 40 or 50 of the sectors. But the point of the tiers is that as we move through the tiers, the businesses open at greater and greater levels. So we'll basically be able to open many businesses from restaurants to movie theaters, et cetera, to 25% of their capacity.
25%.
And then if you move to orange, you often move to 50% of capacity. That's not exactly true for everything, but the state has a great website, COVID-19@cal.gov, at ca.gov, that explains this much better than I am.
I know you're keeping your eyes on Tuesday. Could changes take effect immediately? If I'm a business owner, am I eligible to make those changes immediately?
Yes, when it's announced.
Let's talk about schools. You already mentioned restaurants and movie theaters, but so many families, parents are looking at schools. And Natomas Unified, for instance, is already preparing to allow students back to school. In a press release yesterday, the district said it hopes to welcome students back in mid-October on a hybrid schedule. Can you please talk about what this means for public and private schools in the county?
Yes, it means something for us personally because two of my kids are at Natomas Unified School District. But the schools can open once they have been, this is a little bit of the confusing part. The schools are delayed a little bit further than the other business sectors because you have to be 2 weeks in red to open your school. So we're still in purple. Even though we will have had 2 weeks of red numbers, that moves us into red on Tuesday, assuming numbers stay stable And then we have to be 2 more weeks in the red levels to be able to open schools. So that's why schools can open in mid-October.
Mm. You mentioned having having two kids in school. So I'm going to ask you to put your parent hat on top of your public health official hat and ask, what issues are you going to keep an eye on to ensure that kids are safe to keep going to school once that happens?
Well, clearly the cases of kids getting ill is probably paramount. And that includes kids that and teachers and staff as well. So part of our opening strategy is that teachers and staff of the schools will all be tested at least every 2 months. So a certain percentage every couple of weeks. And we have testing through a Folsom based company called STEM Express, which has been getting us turnaround times of 20 to 30 hours instead of 10 to 15 days, which has been in the previous month. So we have a lot more rapid testing. And we actually have a campaign that we're starting called Turn Sacramento Orange by Halloween. If I could just mention that for a second. So it's based on the fact that we think that there's sort of message fatigue and individuals think that they can't make a big difference in what the county's doing and people don't really understand. So we have 3 concrete actions that we want people to take for the next 5 weeks until Halloween, which we think will turn us a pure orange. And that will open up a lot of the community. And that is mask indoors at all times, except in your house, social distancing in and out of doors, and no indoor gatherings except within your household bubble. Those 3 things people can do for 5 weeks should turn us to orange, which not only opens up the community more, the business sector up more, but also brings the number of cases down to the level that our contact tracers, of whom we have about 100, can actually track every single case and put out the fires before they become conflagrations.
Thanks for sharing the information about the 3 actions to take to bring Sacramento County to orange by Halloween. That's Dr. Peter Bielenson, director of the Sacramento County Department of Health Services. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
This week, Nevada County did move into the orange or moderate tier, and that means that some businesses are allowed to increase activities, see more customers. Now we're going to hear from Nevada County Interim Health Officer Dr. Richard Johnson. Dr. Johnson, welcome to Insight.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
As we just said, you've moved into the orange or moderate tier, so some businesses can, you know, open their doors, increase capacity. What sorts of businesses are we talking about here in Nevada County?
Great, thank you. A number of businesses are able to move, as Dr. Bielenson just said, by increasing their capacity of being able to have people indoors from 25% to 50%. Of their usual capacity. That includes things like places of worship, movie theaters, and restaurants. Gyms and fitness centers are now able to open to 25% of their indoor capacity, including indoor pools, and wineries, maximum 25% indoor capacity. The exception to all of this is bars, breweries, and distilleries, which do not serve any food, are still only able to open outdoors with some modifications. Much more in the way of details is provided on the website, as was previously mentioned, covid19.ca.gov. If you go to the county and then look at the sector you're interested in, it is a very user-friendly website that the state has put together that will give the public quick, reliable, accurate information about what is open in each sector.
Doctor, can you give us a sense of what happened in Nevada County to make this kind of transition into the moderate tier possible?
Yes, I give credit to 2 groups of people. One is our public health folks, our case investigators, and our contract tracers. This is a very time-sensitive function. When we get a positive case, it is really important that they be able to contact that individual to determine where they've been, who they've been around, so that we can immediately turn around and do our contact tracing to try to limit and slow down the spread of COVID-19 infections in the community. That's very time sensitive, requires the staff to do that who are highly trained, and requires the cooperation of the public to pay attention to what's being asked and to give that information so that we can proceed and do the job that we've been trained to do. The second thing is, credit goes to the public. the public gets the credit for doing what we've asked them to do in terms of the social distancing, in terms of the wearing of face coverings, and in terms of minimizing gatherings outside of the home. Those are incredibly important to help us to move forward, to lessen the restrictions, to open up the economy, and help us to recover physically, socially, emotionally, and economically from this devastating pandemic.
What are you doing to make sure that you don't lose any of this important progress that's been gained, to make sure that you don't slide backward and down a tier?
We need to continue on that message. The seasons are changing. People are moving from outdoors to indoors, partly because of the smoke that we've had, but now soon it will be because of colder temperatures and hopefully some precipitation that will move people indoors. As they do so, we need to recognize that since we've moved from red to orange, our risk actually increases during this time as we lessen the restrictions. The restrictions are less in terms of capacity and activity, but the recommendations to do the masking, to do the social distancing, to minimize contact with individuals outside of the home, that is even more important. So we need to especially focus on those messages. Two other messages: people need to continue to get tested. It's important for us in terms of our case positivity rate to have large numbers of people who are asymptomatic continue to get tested so that we can have a good baseline and denominator to demonstrate how little or how much of the infections we have in our community. That's very important. And the next thing is, hey, everybody needs to get their flu shot. There has never been a more important year to think about getting your flu shot, because it would be very devastating to our healthcare system and our first responders if we have a flu pandemic at the same time that we have a COVID pandemic. So we need to continue to pay attention in spite of the fact that we have testing fatigue, face covering fatigue, message fatigue about all of this. This is not a time to let down our guard.
In terms of moving further in the reopening tiers, do you have milestones that you want Nevada County to reach?
Well, we have already gotten into the orange. The next step would be to get into the yellow. And in terms of test positivity, we are already there. In terms of case rates, we have a ways to go on that. And so that is something that we are hoping we can achieve. The time where we would be able to do that is still weeks away. But if everybody does what we have recommended they do, hopefully we can move those case rates down and get to the point where we are able to move into the yellow category, which would mean less restrictions. But again, the risk increases. We need to pay attention.
Sounds like your message this morning is very clear, and that is that we can't let down our guard.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you. And thank you for helping us get that message out.
Dr. Richard Johnson is the interim health officer for Nevada County. Dr. Johnson, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Still ahead, it has been 6 months or so since musicians and orchestra lovers have been able to go out and enjoy that kind of live music. Cap Radio Music's trying to do something about that. So stay with us. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Pamela Wu, in for Randall White today. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Pamela Wu, in today for Randall White. It's been about 6 months now since musicians and orchestra lovers have been able to go out and enjoy live music. Cap Radio Music's trying to fill that musical void with recorded live performances. Tomorrow, Cap Radio's music station will be presenting excerpts from the first European tour by the Sacramento Choral Society. That tour happened 16 years ago. Cap Radio's midday classical announcer, Jennifer Reason, was a student at Sacramento State and was a part of the choir when they toured. Jennifer is here with us today to talk about that tour and the special that she's hosting tomorrow at noon, titled A Tour to Remember with the Sacramento Choral Society. Jen, welcome to Insight.
Thank you for having me, Pam.
16 years ago, this tour allowed you to take your first trip to Europe, I would imagine, as a wide-eyed college kid.
Absolutely.
What was that experience like for you to be there for the first time and to go with the Choral Society to perform?
You know, that was truly one of the greatest gifts I've been given in my music education, was for Don Kendrick to invite the students from Sac State to come. He actually brought 40 of us, so I was one of the 40, and you nailed it with the wide-eyed. I just walked around like, whoa. I was big into Mozart at the time. I saw his house. We performed. It was just a breathtaking.
What were some of your biggest takeaways from that trip? Because you're talking about it now like it just happened yesterday.
You know, it feels like it. It's so surprising to me when they said, oh, it's been 16 years. No, no way. But yeah, the takeaway was Mozart's house, like I said, playing with European orchestras, which was a totally different experience. And just walking around all of these different countries, seeing where the music was made, these composers were born. It really kicked me off on a passion of I want to go to Europe to play music for my career.
Why was it that the Choral Society decided to tour Europe?
You know, they had started out touring nationally, so I asked the conductor, Don Kendrick, why they wanted to expand to such a big thing as going overseas.
We had an amazing opportunity to take the SCSO to Carnegie Hall in New York, and the tour was so enjoyable on, well, really so many levels, that we realized that we travel really well together. And the Carnegie tour gave us, I guess, the courage to take our mission internationally to Europe in 2004.
That's fantastic. What were some of the pieces of music that were performed for European audiences?
Well, we thought we're doing going to Austria, so we'll sing an Austrian composer. So we did the Harmonia Mass by Haydn. We're going to the Czech Republic, we'll do a Czech composer. So we did Te Deum by Dvorak. And then we thought also we will bring a piece of our own culture and selected an American composer, Morten Lauridsen, who wrote the stunning Lux Aeterna.
It is so beautiful and soaring. That's one of the pieces performed by the Sacramento Choral Society during their 2004 European tour. It was recorded live by Radio Hungary at the Liszt Academy in Budapest. Jen, what were some of the other tour venues?
You know, we were so lucky to perform in some concert halls that are world-renowned. There was that one. We went to St. Stephen's Cathedral in Austria. That is where Haydn worked as a boy soprano himself, so that was incredible. We went to Smetana Hall in Prague, and then we went to this abbey in Munich, Germany, and it was at the top of a hill, and it was the Otto Beuren.
It's the best example of Rococo architecture in the world, and it's enormous. And we drove way, way up to the top of this place where the auditorium was located. It's a monastery. And we thought, God, nobody's around here. Nobody's going to come to this thing. And then we had the rehearsal. We went across the street to the pub to have a little supper, and we came back, and the place was packed. It was like over 1,000 people. They'd come from the villages around there, the towns. They drove over to the auditorium, and they packed the place to hear the concert.
That is amazing to hear him talk about, and especially now, I want to pack a concert hall,
right?
to hear some choral music.
Exactly.
I understand that there was a famous Californian/Austrian who almost attended your concert in Austria.
Almost. The president of Austria's recent passing just so happened to coincide with one of the SCSO tour stops. So Don Kendrick and the SCSO's president and CEO Jim McCormick pick up the story from there.
The funeral was in the cathedral that morning before our performance, and Schwarzenegger had flown over to be present for the funeral. So we had sent messages to him that we wanted him to stay for our concert, but he had many more impressing things to get back to Sacramento.
We do know that Governor Schwarzenegger at the time, they had a big banner on the cathedral promoting Sacramento Choral Society, and he did see that. I learned that much. And it was also touching that evening when we performed, there were still flowers on our performance altar honoring the president of Austria. So Don got up, and he had a little bit of help with his German, but he got up and he dedicated the entire concert to the president.
And I remember too, at the end of the concert, the rhythmic clapping. Remember the audience did, Jennifer?
Clapped
in unison, clapping yeah. Rhythmically.
The rhythmic clapping is a real compliment. Like all of a sudden, the audience is like one. It shows respect for the performers if they break out into rhythmic clapping. And I find that really touching.
Incredible memory. I can see why you would continue to remember that 16 years later.
Oh, it's stuck with me every day since.
And I love these interviews, too. They really paint the picture of what it was like to be there. So who are some of the other people that you talked to prepare for the special?
Well, as I mentioned, there were 40 Sac State students, and so many of us have gone on since that tour to become professional musicians and just have a pro career in music. And I really credit that trip with a lot of that happening. So I thought I would catch up with some of the other students. So I have 3 alums, and then I also spoke with Dr. Fisher, who is faculty at Sac State and the one faculty member who came on the tour, and she was one of the soloists as well.
We took some amazing opportunities to visit castles and museums, but the focal point of the tour was indeed singing and music with Dr. Kendrick. Every day there was either a rehearsal or a concert, sometimes both. And that meant staying in shape, staying rested. That was hard for the students, but I made a point of it. I vividly remember hearing the beautiful baritone voice of Stephen Jansen for the first time. What an amazing artist. He was so supportive and such a great partner in the music making that we did together.
Thank you.
so pretty. Mm. One of the works featured on the SCSO's European tour was by an American composer, Morten Lauridsen. What was it like performing that in Europe with a European orchestra? What was the reception?
You know, it's so interesting. One of the venues actually would not allow us to perform it. They didn't even say why. They said, no, you can play the European.
No, thank you.
Nope, you will not. But everyone else where we played it was simply blown away. It was almost like we were introducing them to a language they had not yet spoken. Like they were born in the countries of origin of Haydn and Dvorak. They'd been raised playing their music. So to bring a composer from all the way on the other side of the world with a very different harmonic language and melody and sound, it floored them. And I think Jim says it best.
European audiences, they want to learn more about American music. So there was actually a request from the tour company to add at least one piece by an American composer. And boy, did we score, because at the end of each performance, the orchestra personnel manager would ask, hey, Jim, do you have an extra copy of the orchestra parts for Lauridsen? So thanks to our tour in 2004, we really spread the good word about Morten Lauridsen.
What a compliment to his work.
The ultimate compliment, really.
Absolutely. Let's take a listen right now. That is so beautiful, and I can see why they requested copies of it.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a question to ask about, you know, COVID times, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's next for the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra.
That is the ultimate question on the table, isn't it? I think all arts organizations and all musicians are asking exactly that question. What is next? And the only question that we can really answer solidly is that we will do our best to adapt. And I know the Choral Society is doing exactly that and have planned for an entirely virtual season.
We're in our 25th year coming up now, and what we really wanted to celebrate in a joyful way, live performances. But alas, the pandemic has taken that from us. So we're expecting to have, for most of the year, a virtual season. And we're going to be submitting some videos of past performances. We're going to have interviews with our guest soloists and with our orchestra and chorus.
Our guest has been Jennifer Reason, Cap Radio's Midday Classical Announcer. Her special on the 16th anniversary of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra's first European tour airs tomorrow at noon on Cap Radio's, is that right, tomorrow at noon?
Tomorrow at noon.
Tomorrow at noon on Cap Radio's music station, 88.9, and streaming at capradio.org. Jen, thanks for joining us on Insight today.
Thanks for having me, Pam.
Find out more about any of the guests you've heard from today here on Insight at capradio.org/insight. And we're ending today with a little preview of the music special with this performance of Antonin Dvorak's Te Deum. That is Insight for today. I'm Pamela Wu, sitting in for Randall White today with producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon. The digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Our engineer is Antonio Muniz. Insight's managing editor is Aram Sarkissian. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. Thank you for joining us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.